The Future of Teamwork is a Leader production. Subscribe today and never miss an episode.
I'll do my taxes over jumping in my cold plunge, right? Like if I say I'm going to get in, you know, freezing 40 degree water, 39 degree water for 2 minutes this morning, it's 4 o'clock and I have cleaned the house. I've sent sales emails. I've done all these things I'm avoiding in favor of not doing that, right? I think about that in sales and business of, you know, there's always somebody who is selling because that's the lifeblood of a business. And if you don't see the salesperson in a meeting that you're in, you're it, right? You have to be, otherwise the business is going to fail.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Robin Zander. I met Robin at his conference, Responsive Conference, and it's been fun getting to know him. The founder of Zander Media, doing a lot of work in narrative strategy. I believe Responsive's run for 10 years now, so a great conference for anyone who hasn't been there. Check it out. It's coming up soon. And also Snafu Conference. So a guy that likes to keep busy, but my favorite title is the guy that does handstands on the internet. So it's going to be an interesting and joyful conversation. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
You bet. How did it all come to be? Like, how are you doing all of this cool stuff right now?
In life, there are seasons. I was actually just saying to my wife last week, I got married just 3-4 months ago in March. And I've been feeling like the part of the summer, we're recording in 26, so like June 26, July, has been slower than anything. And then I looked back on the year and I was like, well, from the very beginning of the year to March, I was producing the Snafu conference, which we can get into. I got married and Zander Media had our most profitable, probably 2 quarters
Unreal.
Ever. And so like, okay, maybe it's fine to be working 30 hours, you know, a week for a couple of weeks there. Which then to me felt lazy, right? And I think that actually captures, right? We now talk about project-based careers a little bit more than we did 20 years ago. I came out of college in 2008, so straight into the financial crisis, straight into the housing crisis, moving to San Francisco. Actually, my second job in San Francisco was as a personal trainer at Crunch Fitness.
Oh, yeah.
And the trainer in charge of trainers at Crunch at the time said, if you had come in 3 weeks ago, you would have been swarmed with clients, like good looking guy, ready to help people get fit. And I just had a client who jumped out a window because he lost everything.
Oh, like, that's hard.
You know, so just like in the market, in careers, there are seasons. It's an interesting thing that I ponder because it's not just being busy. It's like, no, I'm a homeowner for the first time in the last year. And I've been like installing garage doors and building my home gym and being domestic, and there's space for that too. It's just you can't do it all. You can have it all, just not all at the same time.
Oh, I love that. There's also something that's really interesting there in first times. Like I was talking to a friend this morning and he was just like, so many people work really hard and they get a result and they deem the result was the product of their performance. And actually, you can't take that performance and then drop it into a whole new environment. I know you've been through a bunch of environments, including the cafe, and expect that the same performance is going to deliver the same result because everything's new. Everything's dynamic,
totally.
Different team members, different market context. You're at a different season of life. And I think that's something that perhaps as teams, we often feel like high performing teams just kind of happen. Because there was a really good plan, but there's so much more craft and humanity to it.
Totally. Yeah. So you mentioned the cafe in 2016, with no restaurant experience other than like bussing tables as my first job out of college. I opened up a cafe, restaurant, and events venue in the Mission District in San Francisco in 3 weeks. So it was April of 2016. I'd lived in the neighborhood 10 years. I'd danced at this community center, dance center in the Mission. There was an opportunity, a couple of kind of miscommunicated emails, and I ended up buying $40,000 worth of assets and starting up a restaurant. And it was the same year that I started Responsive Conference, so that was a manic year of my life. But I was really interested in not just curating about the future of work, but building my own little incubation studio, my own little trial test balloon of what is it like to build teams? What is it like to build a responsive and resilient team? So I had, I think, 3 employees plus me that first, 3 weeks. And on day one, I ask everyone to pull out their phones. We're going to download this really cool new hip technology app called Slack.
Yeah.
And we're going to have this digital representation of our brick and mortar coffee shop. So you're working behind the counter and you need help. You can Slack somebody, right? All this stuff. The first one pulls out an iPhone that was the screen was so cracked, you couldn't even touch it without getting glass shards. The second pulled out, I kid you not, a 1999 pink shiny Razor.
Like yes, a Razor phone Motorola from the 90s. Razor. I love
right,
that
which
phone.
I always wanted in middle school, right? And then the third, who was a millennial living in the Mission District in 2016, said, I don't have a phone. Like, I just don't, I don't have a cell phone. And all of a sudden, I, as the owner of, right, hiring baristas, I'm like, I have to really reevaluate this, as you said, the shape of this team. This is not a technology team. This is a team of skaters who happen to work at a restaurant who want to serve coffee and be left alone, right? And like, you can't even do WhatsApp. It's like, how do I reach the one without a phone? He shows up or he doesn't, right? And so a team is different depending on the context, and you have to adapt to that. And that's been true, right? Like, none of this is new. I'm sure we'll get into AI and other kind of very future pieces of this conversation. But so much of this is just timeless that we have to, like, I'm sure my grandfather knew this. I know my dad knew this, right? Like, here I am learning it in 2016 for the first time.
It's interesting that we have to learn so much through experience as humans too. Like, we're capable of learning through story. You're big on narrative strategy and story, but at the same time, the real visceral moments of learning and growth so often come from that studio lab type moment that you explained there.
Yeah.
So what was it in 2016? You're a busy guy. You started the cafe, you started the conference. What was the problem that you were out there experiencing in the world that you felt those activities were going to start, bringing solutions for?
Yeah, in both, I almost couldn't not. So one of our speakers at Responsive in this year, 2026, is Tim Casasola, who's in org design internal at Airbnb right now. And he I don't even know what he was doing professionally, but he drove up from LA to attend a free unconference. So an event where the agenda is set by the people who show up at the beginning of 2016 on this idea of responsive organizations. And to be clear, I didn't come up with the idea of responsive org. That's also the URL. I'm now the owner or the steward is the way I think about it of the conference and also this movement. But There was a bubbling up in 2015 that culminated in a handful of people writing this manifesto of folks considering the edges of work, right? And so this is things like holacracy, things like self-management, things like remote and distributed work or the role of parenthood in the workplace or, even Slack, which at the time, right, in the launch of Slack was revolutionary. And now we're like, oh, maybe it's too noisy.
Yeah.
But I've been interested in how people work together pretty much as long as I can remember. I grew up in my dad's SMB, my dad's small business. He and his sister ran an environmental consulting firm, actually based now. It was based in my hometown. So he had an office in Novato, California, where I live, which is just funny now, full circle. But they had, 25 or 30 employees. And at 5 years old, their office flooded. So I was brought in to like shuffle papers and like literally shovel out silt from their flooded office.
Wow.
And I remember, wow, they have a conference room and people come and take meetings. But also, like, my dad was a perfectionist. He'll be the first to state, like, he did not like having employees because his employees never cared as much about the business as he did. And so he was always, that's just a classic founder situation where he was always like, upset that his employees were not doing a good enough job. So he had to rewrite their reports, which now as a business owner and having worked for myself for 15 years, like, I get it. Me too, right? Yeah. Mea culpa. I was fascinated by the dynamic between him and his sister as co-owners, right?
Yeah,
and like
family
he's
business.
The elder and right, it's a family business. I think I got paid like $3 an hour to shovel silt, right? Like, at 5 years old. Or then my own first real business was called Robin's Pumpkin Patch at 5 years old, six. So my dad at his heart was and is a farmer and a gardener. who, you know, happened to go into environmental engineering. And so he would have me plant pumpkin seeds, grow them into pumpkins, and then sell the pumpkins throughout the neighborhood pre-Halloween.
Wow.
And the first year we did it, some of the neighbor kids down the street, very a la Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, came over and I dressed them up. We dressed up in scarecrow costumes and like flagged down passing cars. The cars would stop and be like, is that a robot? What's going on here? And I would run out and be like, it's Robin's pumpkin patch. Come buy pumpkins. And, you know, oh, this adorable kid is shilling pumpkins. Great. I can't not buy pumpkins here. Better than Safeway. And so that, you know, recruiting from a place of enthusiasm, right? And selling from a place of like, well, you're going to buy pumpkins anyway. You might as well buy them from the adorable kid who, you know, slaved over growing them all summer, which, I mean, that was the hard part of it, was the growing them. Anyway, flashing forward to 2015, I read this manifesto, responsive.org, and it resonated. It's essentially, it says that the ways we've worked in the 20th century don't work in the 21st century. The organizations that are going to survive are the ones that adapt to change, and that there is not a one-size-fits-all. But I always say, if someone says they have the ultimate answer, not one of the answers, but like the answer to life or to business, they're selling you something. Responsive more states that there are tensions that every organization has to balance, and you might want to think about hierarchical ways of working, more networked ways of working, right? Privacy versus transparency, right? There's a myriad of tensions. So I organized this free event for guessing 20 or 40 people would show up as a favor to me. And instead we sold out 300, right, max occupancy of the event venue on a rainy Saturday in February of 2016.
Yeah.
And to my background, we had people from across industries. We had a global CHRO from Accenture in attendance. Mm-hmm. And we had a catering company that's been in Berkeley, California for 40 years called Three Stone Hearth that's entirely employee-owned and operated.
Yep.
So you've got baristas of a self-managed company debating employee compensation strategy with global CPOs, chief people officers.
Yeah.
And right there, it was like, wow, I can't not do more here. There is an appetite for these conversations. I don't know what it's going to be, but I guess there's an opportunity. Maybe you call that a conference. And I'd been in the circus. I'd done circus performance, but I'd never run a conference. And so here I am being like, well, let me put on a show.
Yeah.
Right? And like, so I chose very unusual venues. We got very lucky. That was the era when Chris Fussell, co-author of the New York Times bestseller Team of Teams, came and spoke. Gail Karen Young-White, who was the CHRO of Wikimedia, parent company of Wikipedia. Joel Gascoigne, who was the CEO of Buffer, which was at the time the largest fully distributed company in the world and did all sorts of weird experiments with transparency.
Mentoring programs and all sorts.
Right. Bless him, Tony Hsieh and his entourage declined an invitation to speak and then showed up on day one and sat in the back and took notes. And so I'm this novice events producer interested in these ideas about the future of work, but not an org design consultant, not a PhD, you know, PD person.
Yeah.
And there I have these luminaries sitting and listening to people on stage, right? And really responsive grew out of that and has continued to now 10 years on.
So the manifesto existed before the conference. So that's how you came up with the idea. And I'm fascinated because the manifesto was clearly solving a problem that people felt pain in every day, that the workplace, the way of working wasn't designed for the modern world. Did those people happen to have shared beliefs outside of how to balance those tensions? You know, were they more optimistic, more outdoorsy, more creative? Like, how would you describe that community of people that were kind of living in that problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a fun question. I don't have a clear answer. Like, we'll have to ask that on stage.
Yeah.
You're going to be on stage at Responsive. We can ask that. But I don't know, hopeful?
Hopeful.
Right? Like, willing to experiment?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not tilting at windmills, not arguing with reality, but willing to try new things?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I mean, It's interesting because, like you said, we're going to get into AI as you roll forwards to now. There's a lot of talk out there. There's a lot of great research happening that people are delegating not only their thinking, but their understanding of things. And that's not a very hopeful or willing way to exist in the world. So it's like there was that group who continue to be growing around responsive.org and the responsive conference. And then there's this kind of new group that are just trying to say, well, rather than try something new, why can't I just push it all on AI and go live on universal basic income? Like there's some very different undercurrents. Well,
I'd say the research on UBI is actually very clear that it works, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not actually hearing that, like, we've been seeing that same trend of let me just outsource my brain to social media before it was AI, right? Like, you know, I'm in front of me this way, I have a wall full of books, right? Which is, despite Xander Media making video, that's one of the main things we do. Like, my preferred mechanism for media intake is physical printed books.
Yes.
There's a quality of, like, yeah, I think humanity's at a really interesting point right now where literacy is going down, right? And I don't think anybody across political spectrum or anything else is arguing that, you know, at least arguing publicly, that low literacy is good for humanity. But that's the reality we're seeing is like, yeah, why would I read a nonfiction book when I can just ask Claude to summarize this book for me?
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, I think in some ways, the thing that's the most interesting about the manifesto, and credit where due, Adam Pisoni, who was the co-founder of Yammer, Aaron Dignan, who founded The Ready and wrote a book called Brave New Work, a handful of others, they're listed on the website. Wrote the manifesto saying the rate of change continues to accelerate, number one, and the future is increasingly hard to predict.
Yeah.
And that we felt that, they felt that to be true in 2015. Here we are in 2026, and it's like, yep, hold my beer, right? Like that's really true. What's going to be done about that, right? Is the future bright, let's just say, for America or for the world, right? Like there's enough existential crises that are not being taken seriously in the world, right? Like people are debating whether climate change is real, which to me is like, I'm sorry, that debate is over if you look at any research, right? And I'm a pretty staunch environmentalist. I grew up in the mountains. Like there's no doubt.
Yes.
And so that we debate that doesn't give me a lot of hope, but I'm like, and the only thing we got for us is we have to hope. We have to, like, it's not just optional to be positive anymore. You have to be, because otherwise you just go scroll, you know, Facebook and don't use your brain. And, you know, it's so easy to be comfortable in the world today, especially in the first world.
Yes.
Right? It's like, this is just ridiculous homeownership, but like, I just got a garage gym for the first time and we just installed new garage doors. And the garage doors are powered on electricity. And I have buttons in my garage that open and close the doors. And I have a button in my car that open and close the doors. And I have a keypad outside the garage that open and close the doors. And it's like, do we not realize how abundant that is?
Yes.
And humans were built in, designed in, created, like evolved in hardship.
Correct.
And that's a real tension because it's way easier to eat Doritos than it is, you know, slightly undercooked steak and to chew forever on steak. But actually the muscles of the jaw were formed through chewing like nearly raw meat for centuries.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had a great health coach at one stage, Dan, and he was like, you know, for you to take on 6 Krispy Kreme donuts, the calorific load in carrots, you'd have to eat like 2 pounds of carrots. Like your jaw will give out before you can eat that many 100%. Calories.
I'm surprised it's only 2 pounds. I would guess it's like 20 pounds, right? It's like an indigestible number of carrots.
I know.
Yeah.
But you do think about that. We've created all of these, like, not synthetic, but definitely new ways of eating, behaving, living. And I do sense that there's something there in kind of not yearning for the past, because the quality of life, to your point, is far better now, but finding some reconnection with like what our bodies and what this earth were originally shaped for.
Right. And it's interesting going back to work. So let's just take a controversial topic right now in this day and age of DE&I, right?
Yeah.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. I've been curating on the future of work long enough, 10 years now, that
yep.
I've seen a pendulum of DE&I swing, I don't know, like 3 times hard in both directions, right? So during the murder of George Floyd, like
yep.
that was pinnacle, right? And
yep.
then 3 years before that, it was kind of, whatever. And then before that, it was crux again, right? And now
yeah.
we're at a time where it's demonized. And like, you know, there's there in both directions, right?
Correct.
One of the things that I do just kind of personally to stay sane is I've been reading more history than I have mm-hmm. historically. And like, I didn't really realize that the Ku Klux Klan in America had a huge, like, national resurgence in the 1920s and 1930s and 1940s.
Yep.
Right? I think of white nationalism as a thing of the past, or I did before the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, no, actually, that's in my grandparents' lifetime, like, very memorably.
Yes.
Right? And so we have these pendulums that, in some ways, it's useful to study because it gives more shape to the current, right? And maybe makes me take the current, I don't know, less pessimistically in some way, or at least more, you know, certainly more informed.
It's interesting. You had Simone Stolzhoff at your event last year, who I thought was brilliant on anxiety. And he was talking about just the heightened anxiety that's being lived on in the world and how to deal with uncertainty. And what was interesting there is his construct was how you build mindset and habit to be able to deal with uncertainty as a group. And I think even some of those negative things, like the Ku Klux Klan resurgence, it was just ways that people were dealing with uncertainty. And they were probably being manipulated more by the owners of the structure than everyone being fully into it. And
sure.
we're seeing that even in today's politics. It's not necessarily a statement of this is where we are here to stay. It's a statement of this is what people are suffering through and how can you build better structures for them to be more proactively, productively engaged in, which sounds like that resonates with the Responsive Manifesto too.
Yeah. No,
fascinating.
100%.
What do you see then, Robin, as you think about these different responses, responsive organizations, that are going to be happening in different shapes, forms, segments of the market when it comes to performance? Because I know that there's some great stories, like you look at Holacracy and, you know, Morningstar and others, there's some great stories of Holacracy working, but also, you know, you don't see some
know.
Of these things working at scale.
Yeah. So Holacracy, I don't know how much your listeners are aware, Brian, and there was a group of people who built this movement of very prescriptive self-management. The
yeah.
most notable case of it was, of course, at Zappos. We,
yeah.
in 2019, on stage at Zappos, which is where the Responsive Conference was held in 2019, had somebody responsible for rolling out Holacracy at Zappos, which ultimately they rolled back,
yeah.
and the co-founder of Holacracy debating Holacracy on stage.
Oh, wow.
So it was very, like, there's fireside chats, and then there's, like, fireside, like,
and
it's on fire. Yeah. So it was pretty intense. Friendly, they're friends, but right, you can find that or we can link to that in the show notes. Again, prescription, right? And then Morningstar, Doug Kirkpatrick, who was early at the Morningstar tomato manufacturer, is going to be on stage talking about self-management at Responsive this year. If someone says they have the answer to all of your problems, they're selling you something, right? And there's
yeah.
probably some, snake oil in that sale, right? Because there is no one solution to every single problem.
Yeah.
And to accurately put a process into a given organization, it has to be customized to that organization, at least in my experience.
Context
I've never
matters.
Seen. Right. You know, if you and I, Dane, are going to start a company together, the dynamic of that company is going to be very different than if you start the company by yourself or I start the company by myself. Like, it just, because the DNA of the people in it, and especially the people in positions of power,
yeah.
shape the dynamic of the organization itself.
Yeah.
Right? you know, and even AI, right? It's like, it's so easy to outsource and to just not read books in favor of asking Claude or asking ChatGPT. But you can also train an instance of Claude to like never give me the answer, just help me learn the process of doing this, right? And that takes framing, and that takes disciplining the machine to only help me learn, not give me answers.
Yeah.
But that's totally possible too. I'm practicing not very well, but shwia, as we say, Darija, which is Moroccan Arabic, because my wife is Moroccan. And it's Moroccan Arabic is not Egyptian Arabic. It's not classic Arabic. It's a mix of Arabic and Berber, Spanish, like Spain Spanish, French, because Morocco was a French colony.
Yeah.
And it's different. Like, people in northern Morocco will often not be able to understand the Darija people speak in southern Morocco. Like, it's that.
Wow.
Right? And that's hard. I may never be fluent, but I want to try because it's hard. And also because I want to be able to speak to my wife's father and her brothers in their native tongue, right? And our children to be raised at least bilingual, if not more. But like, the hard is also part of the point.
So there's this theme then around embracing hard, and maybe that hard is the thing that forges the better path or a different path forward for a team. So tying that back into performance, because I know we talked about performance earlier, sometimes things aren't hard when you're always winning and you need to have some losses to kind of create that feedback.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot about celebration, right? That's nice. Celebrating not just the victories, but the failures, right? In the same way, you can study the victories just as intensely as you study the failures, but most people don't, because we're so busy feeling good and being like, okay, I got that. I made, you know, my world, I made that sale. Yep. So I don't need to study why it worked, but studying why something worked is just as valuable as studying the opposite.
Yeah. It's a friend of mine actually said a quote talking about sales teams, but I think it's true, and it may be part of the reason why people don't love to study failures. And he said, in teams, fear loves to hide. Like, people talk about their fears very openly.
And in life, fear loves to hide, right? Yeah. I mean, I will spend as much time I'll do my taxes over jumping in my cold plunge. Right. Like, if I say I'm going to get in, you know, freezing 40 degree water, 39 degree water for 2 minutes this morning, it's 4 o'clock and I've cleaned the house. I've sent sales emails. I've done all these things I'm avoiding in favor of not doing that. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I think about that in sales and business of, you know, there's always somebody who is selling, you know, because that's the lifeblood of a business. And if you don't see the salesperson in a meeting that you're in, you're it, right? Like, you have to be, otherwise the business is going to fail.
Yeah.
Right. And so what are the, you know, everything you want's on the other side of a hard conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's fascinating. So when we were talking about some of the World Cup teams and how there will inevitably be players dropped and coaches sacked for performances in this
100%.
Cup. When you think about teams that are trying to adapt and the world outside of them is changing, they don't get to play quite as finite a game as soccer, despite how VAR is changing soccer right now. but you know, how might those teams be more open-minded about not getting rid of the leader in that moment of poor performance? Have you seen good evidence or good examples in the community around how people are like taking that as more of a embrace the mistake and learn from it moment?
Yeah. Let's talk about it in work first, and then we can go back to physical performance teams, which is actually my, you know, like where I got started.
Yeah.
First as a runner and then gymnastics. In the early days of Responsive, we talked a lot about public companies being responsible to next quarterly earnings.
Mm-hmm.
And then Eric Ries, the author of The Lean Startup, who now has a new great book called Incorruptible, and he's on stage this year at Responsive, talks about financial gravity and how not just in the public markets, but also, you know, a Series A startup is responsible for earning their next, you know, for raising their Series B. And the VCs want to show good numbers of the Series A moving to Series B for their next fund that they need to raise, right? And so, like, you know, the VPs want the company to perform in a specific way that may or may not be aligned with the workers who are employed by that company.
Yeah.
And so what Eric Ries suggests, and again, he articulates this in mass detail with lots and lots of examples in Incorruptible, is it has to be overlapping domains of mission drive, right? It has to be, of course, the founder's clear mission, and then the board seats, and then the employees, and then the company culture. And it's not any one of these. It ends, you know, having it be a B Corp or, you know, not the standard kind of operating principles and bylaws of the business. But actually, you know, two of those is better than one, and 15 of those overlapping spheres that push against financial gravity are better than two or three.
Yes.
And so there is no one thing, but for every organization, knowing what your mission is and having a great culture and having a charismatic leader who is pushing in that direction and having an ecosystem, like one of the interesting examples is Costco, right? Costco's ecosystem of vendors now funnel the Costco business model. And like, that's fascinating. I wouldn't have considered that.
No.
Right? But every piece of the business can be either working towards the demise, towards the like private equity is going to buy this and run it into, I just heard that I think it's Tapatio just got bought by private equity. And
right.
So like, okay, well, you all know what that means. It means that, you know, stock up now because you're Tapatio, and pardon me if I'm getting this wrong, but like a year from now, it's going to be a shitty product.
Yeah.
Right. But that's also reversible in the opposite direction. You just have to plan ahead and treat it really strategically.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that in sports teams. Like, obviously, I've never been a part of a World Cup football team, but not just judging. The score takes care of itself. My Philosophy of Leadership by Bill Walsh.
Yep.
There's a bunch of interesting looks. Another great sports book is called The Captain Class, which is about not the, you know, primary scorer on I think in this case it's a basketball team, but the captain, the person who holds the team together, right? Who might not be the front man, might not be the most charismatic, right? But is part of the back to culture and what is the glue that makes this team work? Because at least in most sports, all team sports, you can't have just one core person. If the rest of the team falls apart, it still fails.
Yes.
Right? And so I think that there's some really interesting, like, how do you judge the whole and not punish the, you know, the standout good or bad person? You know, of course, the goal scorer is always going to take, you know, is going to be the thing we see because we're celebrating, okay, that person, you know, made the most goals there. But like, there is a team involved, and how do we, back to financial gravity, look at all of the overlapping factors that contribute to that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought. And I think to your point on performance and the overlap, I love the overlapping sort of dimensions of mission drive, because often it is a supply chain, whether it's within an organization or in the Costco example with their vendors. And you don't always see the edges of performance because they might be hidden away. And as much as we do organizational network analysis and other, you know, important pieces of work to understand like who has certain knowledge or who do people go to for certain things, like a true understanding of what's creating, you know, experience, philosophy, belief, trust, all of these things in teams and in customer and vendor relationships is going to be very difficult to codify as people keep shipping to AI.
Yep.
That's cool. That is very hopeful and human. It makes me think, you referenced a couple of great books there. Had you read Bob Chapman's book, Everybody Matters, or followed any of his work at Barry Waymiller?
I know the name and I know Barry Waymiller. I haven't read his book.
Yeah. So, I mean, he seemed to be writing about mattering before the latest wave of, you know, Zach Mercurio and Jennifer Brandy Wallace and others. And what I liked about his approach, and I hear some semblance of commonality there, was he really thought about span of care over the employees. And he was like, we run manufacturing businesses, but our purpose is to improve the lives of our employees. And that was a shift well ahead of its time. And I still don't think a lot of people who operate in some of those industries are thinking in the way that Bob and his leaders did for their organizations.
100%. Another one is Danny Mayer of Union Square Hospitality Group. And, you know, now Shake Shack is probably what he's most known for.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Originally it was Union Square Cafe. His book, Setting the Table, and he has a new book coming out in September I haven't read yet. But I gave Setting the Table to every single employee who came through Robin's Cafe. Right.
Yep.
That's another where it's like, you're just a barista. And it's like, yeah, but if this person really is bought in culturally to the heart of the mission of the organization of feeding people and, you know, supporting their day, like it has to, you have to channel authority to the frontline workers.
Yeah.
Right? And that's an idea as old as time, but you have to actually do it. And that's the hard part.
It is. Yeah. I remember Dan Pink talked about that study where they gave the chefs in the kitchen iPads where they could see the people enjoying their food.
Oh, and, cool.
And the whole experience of the customers lifted because all of a sudden people understood that there was mattering, that if it wasn't for the work that they were doing in the kitchen, these people wouldn't be having these enjoyable experiences. And if it wasn't for the enjoyable experiences, the people's work in the kitchen didn't matter as much. So it was just a really cool symbiosis.
Yeah, that's great.
That's super cool. Where do you see some of the biggest challenges then? So there's clearly a problem, a felt problem in workplaces, and teams aren't always feeling that sense of mattering and connection. What are some of the bigger obstacles that you're observing that are impacting teams and their energies?
I mean, there's so much anger. There's so much fear, right? I mean, even our theme for Responsive 26 is, you know, predictability is gone. Now what?
Yeah.
Right, is like in an age where things are less predictable than ever, how do we work? How do we team? How do we build? You know, if you were, for example, a tech company doing anything in financial tech, and then ChatGPT just launched this, like, connect all of your bank accounts and we can tell you everything about your net worth, right? That's the, if you remember the old days of mint.com and, right, like, what is it, Monarch and all of those, like, ChatGPT just came in and said, like, great,
crush.
See ya. Like, that's that whole industry. But another example, there's greater than ever disparity than in my lifetime, or certainly my parents' lifetime, probably my grandparents' lifetime. Not in human history, but, you know, Elon's worth, net worth, you know, trillionaire compared to yours or mine.
Yeah.
Compared to somebody in the third world who, you know, like, has never handled a computer. It's unfathomable in all of the directions. And we're seeing that play out in the US right now. We're seeing that play out globally, right? And that has throughout history inevitably resulted in revolution. And usually it's violent revolution.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's, you know, a friend of mine, that's a real concern, right? And like, love democratic socialism or hate it. A friend of mine's the CTO for the city of New York, right? But like, we're also seeing the rise of authoritarianism in the world. And like, these things are not unrelated. Let's just say
Correct.
That. Like, so, or played out in my own life, my wife works as a forward deployed engineer for an AI company.
Mm-hmm.
So she is working with hordes of agents doing data as a service for Frontier Labs, right? So she is on the cutting edge of AI.
Uh-huh.
I, at Xander Media and Responsive, use AI in everything I do all day, every day. Like, this meeting is being recorded by an AI.
Yeah.
And then we box at like a 1980s boxing gym, like very classy Rocky-style boxing gym,
nice.
4 days a week. My wife and I, some of the guys we train with, have never touched an LLM in their lives, right? And there too, we have that stratification.
Yeah.
So what does that mean, right? Like, it means trouble if we don't resolve it. And in what period of time, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's great. Like, how do we lift, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, and we're not living through a time of rising tide right now, at least
doesn't
on the
feel
extremes.
Like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it is interesting. I think revolution is a good word to be pausing on, because I have a more hopeful view of revolution. And that is that, you know, in that moment of need or frustration, and things are getting pulled apart, not just classes, even demographics of age. Like Galloway came 100%. Out this week saying, you know, young people just aren't meeting and mating at the rates that they used to. And, you know, the whole remote work environment isn't really serving many of those folks from a growth and social standpoint. Amongst other things like investment profiles and, you know, all the rest of the great things he talks about. But as I start to think about it, I'm like, well, there has to be some form of positive revolution where people start saying, well, I'm going to start these types of businesses. I'm going to start serving the needs of those people. And maybe, you know, with some of the people that are being spun out with wealth out of these frontier labs or, you know, other large corporations, SpaceX, maybe those people are going to go back and say, it really matters the world that I live in. And I'm going to start putting down some bricks and mortar business or some opportunities in my community, because I don't want to be living in Gotham City. Right?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And it's been fun to watch, right, back to the pendulum in both directions. I lived in San Francisco from 2008 to 2018. You know, so I saw the rise of, for example, the Mission District, right, and the cafe, which is still around today, still called Robin's Cafe, though I'm not in any way involved. Grew because of that positivity. Then during COVID, that neighborhood was just where I lived was wiped out. It was a ghost town. And now, like, I just had coffee with a friend in the city a couple of days ago, and it's back again, right? And it's like these things. And during COVID, I just remember everyone in tech was like, San Francisco's gone. It's never coming back.
Yeah.
What a shitty town, right? And it's like, no, there are pendulums in, you know, across time.
Yeah.
And it's back to, you know, what direction are we pushing which pendulums in?
Yeah, absolutely. So for anyone out there who's listening, whether they're in a team and they have the luxury of some resources and some optionality as far as where they take their team, or maybe they're more entrepreneurial like yourself in 2016 and they're thinking, hey, I want to go and build something I can learn from and grow off. You know, where would you be pointing attention in today's kind of state of the state?
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have done what I did in 2016, which, you know, very modest, very small thing in its own way, right? Built two businesses during the same year, had I not been in person. And so in some way, go where the activity is. And despite, you know, rents being absolutely insane in San Francisco right now, historically something like 80%, 85% of the global tech economy was concentrated within 10 miles of San Francisco.
Wow.
It's closer to 99% of AI is concentrated within a 10-mile radius of San Francisco. And so, you know, go to where the activity is. You know, if you're interested in music, you're going to do better in Nashville than you are in Silicon Valley. Like, there's gravity to specific things and meeting people. And back to, you know, what Scott Galloway was saying about mating.
Yeah.
Is meeting people and humans are meant to gather in person, which is why I produce events. Is like the magic that comes out of gathering in person is, you know, is humans are physical beings, and there's no two ways about that. What else would I recommend to teams? Like, there are so many experiments that you can try, right? So like, go read some books, go look at some experiments. When I was opening the cafe, I don't know, 50 chefs from around San Francisco gave me advice. Everybody who's doing experiments in organizational structure is willing to, if you come like truly open-hearted and like curious, share some ideas, right? Hey, so-and-so company, what's worked, what's not? We're doing a couple of sessions at Responsive on like experiments with AI, right? And it's like, what's this person doing to experiment? What's that person doing to experiment? And not just humans, but teams, you know, or, you know, teams of teams.
Yeah.
What are the experiments that we can do that we can learn from other people, right? So that we don't have to do them all and invent them all from scratch ourselves.
Love that.
So go to where the gravity is, right? Learn from other people who are doing experiments, ask questions. Another one that I'm doing is like, I just feel better when I'm reading more books about history instead of like listening to political, political podcasts.
Love that.
Actually, I was enjoying Raging Moderates by Scott's podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and, you know, I can look at the New York Times once a week and not read, not listen to a podcast every day. And my health is better for it.
Yeah.
So like focus, you know, during COVID, what do we say? Like, look for the helpers, right?
Yes.
Like look for the people who are positive. Look for the people who are excited building the world that you want to be a part of, right?
Oh,
look for
that.
The people who are using AI towards the outcomes you want and go help.
Good dive in. Oh, I love that. I think they're great. Great recommendations, Robin. And, throughout this conversation, I think from your beginnings or new beginnings in 2016, and then obviously the beginnings went all the way back to Robin's pumpkin patch, but into this whole kind of sense of the responsive.org, ethos of bringing people who are more hopeful and willing to experiment together. They are the kind of bones from which we've often throughout history been able to generate some really positive changes. And one of my favorite coaches always said, hey, don't hang out for the perfect change. Like if you really believe in this, if you really wanted to become a rugby coach, well, just start coaching a local team.
Oh, like, I love that. Yeah, 100%.
Just do a little bit of it now. Don't wait.
So I produced this one-day conference on go-to-market in March called the Snafu Conference, and I write a weekly newsletter, which is kind of the best way to keep track of me, called Snafu. Join snafu.com. First time I've done a new conference since I started Responsive, and it's a one-off, at least for now. But the amount I learned, of course, from incredible speakers and a bunch of like well-known startup founders and VCs and other things, and then in the last 2-3 months, I've been absolutely obsessed with selling things on Marketplace.
Mm.
Like, Dane, you'll appreciate this. We had a palm tree growing in our front yard that we needed to get rid of.
Yeah.
So instead of hiring an arborist for $1,000 to remove the tree, I sold it for $200 on Craigslist. Someone
Unreal.
Literally came, dug it up, put it on the back of their truck, and took it away for $200. The amount of learning that I've done on this topic of sales and go-to-market by selling things on Marketplace while also getting rid of stuff in my house that I don't need, that I've just carried around with us.
It already exists in small ways.
And it's, right. I picked up a microwave off the street from a neighbor who was getting rid of it. It's a $1,000 built-in microwave, and I'm selling it right now, like, you know, for a couple hundred dollars. I don't need to, but it's fun practice, right? And back to your example of, like, just get your hands dirty, right? If you want to go study something, do it in a small way.
Yeah.
Right. The question people in the responsive world often ask is this safe to try? Is this experiment safe to try?
Yeah, I love that. That reminds me of some great podcasts I've heard of businesses that started just that way. Someone bought their first $165 of sunglasses and was selling them at a local flea market. And the next thing you know, they're manufacturing and designing their own brand. Like,
yeah,
the learning through practice is awesome. Well, you mentioned some good ways to find you, Robin, but for any of our listeners that want to, you know, find more out about Xander Media, about Responsive Conference, about Snafu, where's the best spot?
Yeah. So Xander Media is an advisory first video production shop that, you know, we do video for. We've worked with Airbnb, we've worked with Zappos, did some work with Boom Supersonic back in the day before they were the name brand they are now. Sequoia Consulting. So that's Xander Media. My last name, ZANDER media.com. Everything about me, the newsletter, et cetera, is robinpzander.com.
Yep.
The Snafu newsletter, you can sign up there. It's free, comes out every weekend. If you want to gather in person, if you've liked this conversation, particularly Dane, obviously you're going to be there. Leader is going to be there.
Yeah.
For your audience, Responsive Conference is responsiveconference.com.
Awesome. We'll make sure we get this out quickly so people can get there in September.
Well, Dane, it's such a pleasure. Any chance that I have to hang out with you and your community and just the way you show up in the world, the work that you're doing in the world, it's such a pleasure. Collaborating with you on Responsive this year has been a joy already. I can't wait for more.
Thanks, Robin. Likewise. Well, thanks for the time, and we'll talk soon.
I'll look forward to it.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, The Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation, and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on The Future of Teamwork.